Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. My name is Trish McLaughlin, and I'm joined in welcoming you today by the Reverend Chrissy Anderson. This chalice lighting is written by Elizabeth McMaster. We light our flaming chalice to illuminate the world we seek. In search for truth, may we be just. In search for justice, may we be loving. And in loving, may we find peace.
Good morning. Thank you for coming on this very warm day. I'd like to share a true incident I experienced that may resonate with some of you. Several weeks ago, I was playing music at the hospital in Ravenna where I'm a volunteer. A woman approached me and asked if I would be interested in playing music at a party that she was hosting. I told her I'm not an entertainer, but she was persistent and insisted that the music I was playing would be the perfect background for her party, and she went on to give me details about the event. When I said I might be interested, she asked for a business card with contact information. Well, this was new for me. I have never been asked to perform music for pay. So the only card I could give her was my minister's business card, which states that I'm affiliated with this church. She studied the card for a minute and then said, "Is that the church that's downtown Kent near the river?" And when I said, "Yes, it is," she turned, walked away without any word of explanation. I've seen her since then, and she's avoided making eye contact with me. I'm sure that many of you have experienced instances when someone had a negative reaction upon learning of your UU involvement. I can recall very hateful phone calls received at the church office when we first started our Hogwarts program. And you may remember several years ago that the state of Texas actually tried to repeal the tax-exempt status of UU churches due to the lack of a doctrine stating a belief in God, therefore alleging that Unitarian Universalism doesn't qualify as a religion. Instances of uninformed negativity are quite disheartening. Yet, although UUs are marginalized, because of our denomination's Christian roots and the European heritage of most UUs, we still have far more power and influence than members of many minority religions in this country, even though their total followers far outnumber ours. There are people in our country, even in Kent, who are much more at risk for religious intolerance than we are. I'm a member of the Interfaith Engagement Committee at Kent State University. We were provided with statistics on this year's enrollment, which includes students from 102 countries, representing 10 different organized world religions, and of course, many other spiritual paths. Nearly 900 Muslims are enrolled at KSU this year. Most are graduate students, and many are from foreign countries and are here with their spouses and children. There are Muslim children in our public schools. And in fact, a Muslim family lives on our street just a couple of houses away, and two of their children help us rake leaves and shovel our snow. This summer, one of our two summer youth workers at my job was a Muslim from Kent Roosevelt High School, and he's an American-born Muslim. Although religious minorities are not highly visible, we are indeed a community of religious diversity. Religious and cultural diversity possess the potential to weaken social bonds within a community, because we're hardwired to distrust those outside of our tribe. Yet, diversity can be a wonderful opportunity for personal growth and an opportunity to to live our values through social justice. Let us open our minds and hearts and explore the difficult yet meaningful interfaith dialogue. Come, let us worship together. This time we devote together in reverence provides an opportunity to quiet our minds and offers respite from our daily burdens. I invite you to slow your breathing, relax your body, and empty your mind. Use this moment to be present in this sacred time and space. I offer words for contemplation. They were written in 1983 by Caroline Arnold, a longtime member who recently passed away. War is not about dying for one's values. War is about killing for one's values. All of us must die someday. Killing is a choice we make. Let us enter into a time of silence. Please join for a moment of prayer. In the presence of the source of love and life, on this Labor Day weekend, let us lift up those who came before and struggled so that we may benefit from more just working conditions. Let us honor all of today's working people, particularly those who engage in jobs that are perilous, those who work hours that require personal sacrifice, and those who receive low pay. May we hold in our hearts the individuals who desire to earn a living but face obstacles. May we be mindful of those who engage in necessary but unpaid responsibilities, such as raising children or caring for infirmed loved ones. I invite you to inhale the love that surrounds you in this sacred space. Let it enlarge your heart, nurture your strength, and inspire your actions. As we each strive to satisfy our need for a livelihood and our need to contribute, grant us blessings. Amen.
The practice of interfaith work has been evolving since the mid-20th century. In the 1950s, an interfaith gathering often meant the inclusion of representatives from numerous Christian denominations and perhaps a Catholic. For the more enlightened and radical groups, it might even include a Jewish member. But during the 1960s, an awareness of Eastern religions and earth-based indigenous beliefs grew. More faith traditions joined at the table, and they discussed social issues such as earth stewardship, civil rights, and the role of women. They were idealists who emphasized the commonality of the major world religions. Some idealists even envisioned the possibility of one world faith, a blending of the best beliefs and practices of the different faiths into a new world religion, a concept which is called syncretism. This idealism has waned as religious scholars have asserted their recognition that the world's religions are actually very different in the societal roles they fulfill. Interfaith activity, however, has grown significantly since the September 11th tragedy and has taken on a new, narrower goal. Due to the concerns with strife between Jews, Muslims, and Christians, peacemaking efforts between the three Abrahamic religions is often the goal of these interfaith efforts. The unifying thread promoted at these encounters is the recognition of a common God. This focus on a common God has resulted in the exclusion of other religious traditions, Buddhists in particular. Groups that had been involved in interfaith activities in earlier decades are now complaining about being excluded due to the urgency of addressing terrorism and war. One Wiccan lamented the fact that interfaith discussions about environmental work has waned, and that if your religion does not have a contemporary practice of engaging in war, it's not invited to the interfaith table. As religious diversity grows in America, both interfaith work and the effort to create a more pluralistic society increases in complexity and urgency. The word diversity recognizes differences without applying any value judgment. Pluralism is a word coined by religious professor Diana Eck of Harvard University, creator of the National Pluralism Project. She uses the word pluralism to identify the process of diligent engagement of diversity to build strong bonds. It is intentional coming together to create instruments of relationship. The challenge in creating a pluralistic society entails honoring the seemingly paradoxical objectives of respecting the vast realm of religious differences while lifting up common grounds that are strong enough to unite the diversity of followers.
I'd like to share a very brief public service announcement. This features individual who was a medical responder and one of the first to arrive on the scene following the collapse of the Twin Towers on 9/11.
When we arrived, we realized there was chaos, there was a lot to be done. There were many firefighters, NYPD, and first responders that needed help. So we did anything we could, from morgue duty to developing a makeshift eyewash station, to creating, I wanted to help my fellow Americans and my fellow New Yorkers. That's why I did it. My name is Rudy. I'm a clinical pharmacist, a first responder in 9/11, and a Muslim.
This public service announcement was made 2 years ago, at the time that there was a controversy in New York City about plans to build an Islamic community center a few blocks away from Ground Zero. Before seeing this particular film clip, I actually saw Rudina O'Day Ramadan in a TV interview. When she was asked by the reporter why she took the time to be part of this public service announcement, she gave two reasons. First, she said that she was dismayed and hurt that following 9/11, so many of her fellow Muslims and herself were now being seen through a new lens of violence and perceived threat. The second reason was based on an actual experience she had attending a planning meeting in New York City in the very early stages of talking about the Islamic Center. And at the time, the mayor endorsed the project. It met local requirements, and there was not an anticipation that there was going to be controversy about the project. So she went to the meeting with her son, hoping to show him the democratic process and serve as a lesson in civics and also to help him build pride as a Muslim. Instead, she was astonished by the hundreds of ordinary citizens who attended and shouted ugly hate statements, not only about the project, but also about Muslims. She knew that she had to be a voice of awareness, as during the meeting, her terrified son looked at her and said, "Mommy, why do they hate us?" This innocent child's question really pierced my heart when I heard it, because it brought back memories of my own as I sat and watched the TV news and the events of 9/11 unfold with my sons. One of my sons said to me, "Mom, why do they hate us so much?" Two American children asking the same question, coming from two very different perspectives. This short response to the question, "Why do they hate us?" is fear. What are so many afraid of? I would like to share an answer provided by Eboo Patel, the founder of the Interfaith Youth Corps and a keynote speaker at the UU General Assembly last year. He believes that the so-called clash of civilizations is not about Christianity versus Islam versus Judaism, but rather fundamentalism versus pluralism. Religion scholar Karen Armstrong, another GA keynote speaker, explains that fundamentalism is actually a recent outgrowth of all three Abrahamic religions in reaction to the growing secularism, which implements a separation of governance and religion. The reaction to fundamentalists is fear. Fear that religion, culture, and life as they've known it will be lost or corrupted. When there's fear, the compassion, which is inherent in all religious traditions, loses its religious priority. Fear arouses our defenses and actually shuts off our brain's mechanism that enables the exploration of creative solutions. Armstrong claims that the importance of interfaith work is to reduce the devastating effects of fear. Minimizing fear is a huge challenge, but one that's making steady but slow progress, as it requires changing one heart at a time. A significant research study was undertaken in India to examine the issues of tolerance and fear. India has many communities where people representing multiple religions reside in dense proximity, some in peace and some in great turmoil. Researchers wondered, what are the unique attributes that exist in communities that are more peaceful? Not surprisingly, in the peaceful communities, people of all religions interacted to a much larger degree in business, government, education, and social settings. In communities with greater tensions, members of different religious groups were much more segregated, and there was a lack of institutional networks for interaction. The heart of interfaith dialogue is the building of relationships through the intimate exchange of personal stories. Unlike the strategies that we're used to dealing with when there's tension, interfaith gatherings are not about meeting in the middle, negotiating, and building consensus. The purpose is to acknowledge differences in beliefs and practices, explore common values, and to highlight the common good. Critics claim that interfaith work accomplishes nothing. It's merely talk. They miss the point. Talking is the beginning of building bridges. Bridges that will lead to personal transformation. Not of one's religious beliefs, but of attitudes toward the other. In fact, a recent study found that when an individual has personal interactions with someone of another faith, both people improve their attitude towards one another, improve their attitude toward the religion of the other, and surprisingly, their attitudes toward all other religions improves. I want to offer an example with a story involving my mother. My mother and I were very close, and I wanted her to respect the choices that I made in my life. She was a very devout Christian, married to an Episcopal minister, my stepfather. I hid my attendance here for several months, knowing that she would be very upset that I was no longer a practicing Christian. When I decided to tell them about my attendance here, my mother, who had, like many people, had never heard of Unitarian Universalism, knew that I was at a low point in my life, and she thought that I might be able to be influenced by cult-like people. Although reluctant to accept my invitation to come, she accepted at my stepfather's urging because he had met our previous minister, Reverend Julianne Silberman Bunn, when they served together on a committee, and he didn't think that she seemed to be a cult leader. When they came here, my mother wore a necklace with, a huge cross on it, in case anyone saw her coming in and might mistake her for a Unitarian. Following the service, I held my breath in anticipation. She said two sentences that I'll never forget. She said, "The service was very uplifting. I can understand why it's meaningful to you." I breathed a sigh of relief. Now, as I look back, I have even more appreciation for the depth of her statement. It was the ideal response to an interfaith encounter. She found something positive to say about the experience. It was an uplifting service. And then acknowledged that the faith has value by honoring the fact it holds meaning for others. She was able to uphold her beliefs, yet refrained from using her beliefs as a statement of comparison. In two simple sentences, she demonstrated the advice of Eboo Patel and the Dalai Lama. Patel promotes a concept called appreciative knowledge. He feels it's not enough for people to acquire a fact-based academic knowledge of other religions. One has to somehow witness something about the other religion that can be admired as holding value for its followers or contributing to society. One doesn't have to convert to, or for that matter, even understand the other's beliefs, but rather witness that faith and how it contributes to the well-being of others. Patel notes that the Dalai Lama is an expert not only in world religions, but he's an expert on what can be loved about other religions. If you follow the travels of the Dalai Lama, you'll notice that whenever he's with a specific religious group, he'll always find something positive to say about their scriptures or practices. He believes that the path to interreligious peace is through building relationships person to person, and then telling those stories, sharing them with others about the newfound friendship in order to inspire others to engage in interactions across religious lines. It's a recognition of the humanity of others by realizing that everyone shares the common search for purpose, meaning, identity, integrity, and relationships. Patel focuses his interfaith work on younger adults through joint service projects. He also recommends something that was new to me called the creation of faith clubs. Faith clubs are for youth or adults of different religious backgrounds and operate much like our chalice groups. They have a topic of discussion such as forgiveness or earth stewardship. The participants don't share their particular religious doctrine. Instead, they talk about how their personal faith responds to the topic. Both the Dalai Lama and Patel advise interfaith groups to avoid talking about trying to find common religious doctrine and instead focus on finding common values, just as my mother did. On the one hand, it seems so obvious that it ought to be simple, yet this is tremendously challenging. After our hymn of affirmation, we'll explore how you use are addressing interfaith challenges. I found online examples of various UU congregations embracing the interfaith movement. The Columbus, Ohio Church held a community-wide interfaith worship service on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. Of course, holding interfaith events is easier in large cities where the population is more diverse. In many areas where UU congregations are located, there's not a diversity of religious beliefs, yet they may still discover that they need to respond to religious intolerance. You probably recall that in Gainesville, Florida, exactly 3 years ago, Pastor Terry Jones of the Dove Center made a public declaration that in recognition of the 10th anniversary of September 11th, his congregation was going to hold an event to burn Qurans. The Gainesville community and its UU members were suddenly cast into the national spotlight due to this spectacle of hatred. Members of the UU Church of Gainesville participated in several community interfaith events. The largest was scheduled for September 11th anniversary, when the Quran burning was to take place, in order to provide an alternative for media attention. The Gainesville UU minister spoke at the event, and the church choir sang an Iraqi peace song. UU church members used our denomination's Standing on the Side of Love campaign to make a public statement. The Gainesville UUs, rather than being portrayed in the media as spewing more hatred by protesting against the bigotry of a Christian minister, used the opportunity to publicly show the world UU values by declaring solidarity with and love for Muslim brothers and sisters. As a follow-up, the church developed an adult religious education program to become more literate in Islam. Unitarian Universalism has several attributes that can serve as a model for interfaith practices. We find our theological diversity to be an attribute rather than a detriment. This is because we are bound together by something other than doctrine. We are bound by a unifying covenant, which is a code of how we live together. As I noted earlier, it's not advisable for interfaith groups to focus on finding something in common about their religious beliefs. Finding common ground on shared values should be the goal. This is exactly how UUs operate. We share our understanding of how to live, not what we believe. Interfaith engagement is risky, because one is opening up to the possibility that he or she might be changed, which is frightening for many. Again, UUism can serve as a model, as we do this every Sunday as a curious people. In addition, we can also demonstrate fuller inclusion because we embrace atheists who also care about the same issues but are rarely invited to the interfaith table. But before we start feeling too self-righteous, there are things that we, in turn, can learn from the interfaith movement. The first lesson is the importance of knowledge, both academic and appreciative, about world religions. Because we focus so much on the individual's search for meaning and truth, it's easy for us to overlook the wisdom that's been gained over the thousands of years from the humans before us. UUs need comprehensive religious literacy to help better understand current events and to stimulate our own spiritual growth. We can take a step toward enhancing our religious literacy through an opportunity developed by several members of the congregation and the Church Library Committee who are working in collaboration for an event this Friday. We will be fortunate to host a presentation by a Muslim speaker from CARE, which is the Council on American Islamic Relations, who will discuss his religion. Details are noted in your insert in the order of service. In addition, congregation member and art professor Ginger Vaughn will provide a sensory opportunity to deepen our knowledge of Muslim cultures by offering presentations on Islamic art later in the fall. I hope you'll attend, bring a friend, or help spread the word. The second effort we can undertake is to continue to stand in public witness, armed with our standing on the side of love materials. This campaign is one of my favorite resources created by our national association, the UUA. The campaign was developed by folks at the denominational level who were inspired by the words in the hymn that we just sang. The materials can be used for national or local issues because of the message's universal appeal. Who's going to argue against love? We're not protesting, we are affirming. It's a brilliant campaign that allows flexibility in its application. It promotes a positive message, uses a heart logo, and is highly visible with its bright gold color. I conclude by showing the Standing on the Side of Love video clip from the UUA website, which explains the national campaign. Our congregation member, Brad Bolton, submitted photos to the UUA from his past trips to General Assembly, and four were selected to appear near the end of this video. Watch closely, and you'll see only a single photo of a local UU church building, and I think you'll recognize it.
May our faith inspire you
to reach out beyond our walls and reassure those who are marginalized that they are supported by a loving community. I bid you farewell with these words by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. God has given us many faiths, but only one world in which to coexist. May your work help all of us cherish our commonalities and feel enlarged by our differences. Go now in peace.